Oh, hey, it's Ted Schmidt. Doing another Brewster podcast here. This is the Johnson Free Agency wrap-up. And with me, I have Stephen Lane of Long Beach and Randy Wiegand of San Fernando, of course, because it's a podcast and it's me and Randy. Hi, guys.
This is where the Frickly Pacific tells everybody else how to do free agents.
Right, yep, because since we have three Frickly GMs, we figured we'd talk about the Johnson League, because that makes all kinds of sense.
There's no one better than the best division in baseball to talk about free agency.
You know,
especially when two of the three teams really don't ever do anything in free agency.
Yeah, right. Like
I think I signed enough players for the three of us.
Yeah, right. I'm glad you're here because you actually signed players. Yeah, you know, I do the trade review ones where, you know, I'm the guy that doesn't trade, and I do the free agency review, and I'm the guy that doesn't spend in free agency. So it's a little bit silly. Although I did this year. Okay, so did you guys have any, like, big overarching thoughts on this free agency group?
I didn't look at the Frick, but in the Johnson, there were a lot of pretty reasonable signings, I thought. Holy cow, this is a great deal for the team, but also didn't really see any what in the world is this guy doing sort of deals, which is, for free agency standards, when everybody always gets overpaid, that's not bad. Good for us.
Yeah. Steven, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was another good class, a lot of good talent, even with some pre-free agency extensions that took a couple guys out. I still thought it was a good, fun class.
Any weak spots? I didn't see a whole lot. Like, if you needed a center fielder, I didn't see a whole lot there. But otherwise, I thought it had options at a good number of positions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, center field and shortstop are always going to be thin, but
Even the shortstop this year, there were a few. You had Compton and Flores out there who they're not going to be superstars, but they're better than what usually hits the market at free agency at shortstop.
Yeah.
It's true.
No, I agree. Okay. Well, yeah, I think those are kind of the thoughts I had. Regarding the lack of overpays, I really do wonder how much of that is just due to I don't know. I feel like there's been these big shifts in the free agent asking prices, and then some people, when I mention that, seem to think that I'm overblowing what are more minor shifts. I don't know. I realize I'm someone who tends to kind of blow things out of proportion at times. But I wonder how much of the more reasonable deals this year were due to the fact that we were starting at reasonable demands and then bidding up based upon demand, as opposed to people just having to be patient waiting for the demands to get reasonable. I don't know. Do you guys think that was different at all? Am I seeing something that wasn't there? Or?
That's a possibility. One thing I noticed, too, is it seems like we got a lot of the guys signed before spring training this year, whereas in years past, there's always seemingly been a big name or two that gets signed like in the middle of spring training. Like, who's the biggest name left? Hothopopo, probably.
Yeah.
Karlamov.
Maybe Karlamov. No, this is pretty good. You're right. This is a little bit better.
And the one thing I noticed, because there were a few of these signings in the Johnson, nobody is paying backup catchers $3 and $4 million anymore, which is good. Because there's no reason you should pay a backup catcher $4 million.
I'm still of the mind that you shouldn't pay a backup catcher at all. I feel like that's
I'd rather draft strategy issue.
Like, always make sure you've got somebody.
Yeah, but I'd rather defend. Yeah, if you're going to dip into free agency, though, there were a couple signings where it was like $1 million, $1.2 million, $1.5 million, and those are what you should be paying.
Right.
30-year-old journeyman backup catchers.
No, that's true. Okay, Steven, you're going to have to yell over Randy, otherwise he's just going to answer all the questions. You're going to be there quietly.
Okay.
Quietly.
I'm not used to being a three-man pod. I'm sorry. I'm used to hearing Ted ask a question and then answer.
Well, you know, you would be the first to answer even if you knew it was a three-man pod. Come on now.
Yeah, that's probably true.
You do have opinions.
I'm drinking. Give me a break. It's like 7:45 at night here on a Friday.
Yeah, that's the other reason I'm a little rough is I was kind of drunk when I was talking to you at 5 a.m. and when I went to bed. So, I'm going to take a nap after this is what I'm going to do. Then I'm going to do the other podcast. Okay, so let's...
Well, you need to prepare.
I haven't even prepared for the other one. I'm going to go to sleep, get up, prepare for the next one, and do it. Okay, so be okay if we just go alphabetical order through this noise?
That's how I got mine.
Wait, not alphabetical. I was going to do division and alphabetical within division. Can we do that instead?
Sure.
That's too. So, JLA, Atlantic City. They signed Andres. How do you say Andre with an S? Georges.
Does it have an S? I thought it was just Andre. Oh, it is.
There's an Andres somewhere. Maybe I have one of those. I don't know. Who knows?
No, Phoenix has Andres Martinez as their catcher.
Maybe that's it. Starting off with a bang, getting the names wrong. Victor Guerra, Luis Flores, and Alan McHugh.
And Raul Ortiz. Don't forget.
I just started leaving off. Oh, I didn't tell you this. I'm not going to talk about guys making like relievers and backup players and making no money. I'm just not even talking about them this year. They didn't even make the list. I don't care. I don't think anyone else does. Like, every year, I feel like you and I were saying, like, oh, look at that. Snagged that reliever for, like, you know, $900K, which is $100K under market value. Like, who cares? Like, that guy never matters at all. He should stop. Just.
And then they pitch, like, 20 innings during the year.
Right, exactly. Like, you need to get better at this. Steven, what are your thoughts on this batch of new, not mobsters, which is what my note says, because I cannot get out of BBA.
Gamblers.
Gamblers, right.
New gamblers.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty good, pretty good set at some good prices. Georges, however we're pronouncing that today, is a pretty good value, I think. He's not a frontline starter, but he's not being paid like that either. At least if you look at the, you know, the whole contract. Victor Guerra's probably got a couple of good years left in him, so can't knock that one.
You know,
as somebody who had Victor Guerra, what has he done to warrant that much control over his contract? He has both an opt-out and a player option. And I'm not quite sure his past performance, even at reasonable value, which, I mean, averaging just under $5 million a year, I don't know why he deserves to have all the control. I usually would think that would be for somebody who's been a good performer over his recent past, whereas Garrett has kind of been a turd.
You know, I think I'm largely with you, but it's the control issue. As far as the price, you know, he really was an okay-ish hitter in Des Moines last year, and he's still a decent defender, and Atlantic City needed a right-handed outfield bat. They've got three left-handers projecting as their starters. So if he ends up with, say, you know, 300-350 plate appearances and puts up his typical, and he's been able to do it recently, puts up his, you know, last year he was an 832 OPS against left-handed pitching. We're just going to ignore when he was with you.
I like Guerra's the numbers on the contract. I just have issue with the length and the control that he has.
Well, I wonder, do you think that's like a player option that he expects him to pick up? You know, like, is that like a sneaky, like chance to get out of this deal sort of thing?
Well, but he's also got the opt-out. He's also got the opt-out in there.
No, I'm sorry. I meant the opt-out, not the player option. Like, is the opt-out like a... Okay. If he plays well, I can get out of this deal.
I don't know. I'm anti opt out. I don't think I've ever offered one to a player, nor do I ever plan to. So I'll defer to Steven on that one because I just don't believe in opt outs and contracts from a business point of view.
Yeah, I don't. It's probably he's. Yeah, I can't really say, you know, why he's put it in there. I think I agree with Randy. You know, Guerra's not really the type of player that you would think you would, you know, want to attach these kind of things to. But, you know, I don't really think it's that substantial.
You know, you mentioned, do you like the value on Georges? I'm not sure I do. If you look at his, he looks like he should be talented enough to be kind of a fourth starter. And that's a fine price for a free agent fourth starter. I have no qualms about that. And at times in the past, he has been that. But when you look at his FIPs, it was just last year, and I'm getting confused by the way the stats are spread out. So, yeah, maybe this is actually fine. If he pitches like the guy from, he is a little older, so that is, you know, something to take into consideration. He's right around that magic, this could be real, he could suck now, age. But, you know, little over four. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, my comment on that one was you're betting on the New Orleans time being an aberration, and if that's the case, then that's a good deal.
If
it's not an aberration, if that's the new normal, then we got problems. Yep.
I thought he'd been weaker for a little bit, but he is not. So I was wrong. Luis Flores, do we care enough about Luis Flores to discuss this deal?
I said, especially for a free agent reliever, that's decent value.
I thought it was maybe a little high.
It's at the high end, but Flores has been good. If this isn't where you're paying $4 million for a 4.5 ERA, 1.4.
No, it's not egregious. Pitcher. I should probably just stop being so picky. Steven, do you care about Alan McHugh?
No.
Sorry. You're going to talk about Flores. I like it.
I was just going to say Flores is a little bit high. He looks like a loogie to me, but that's because I'm picky.
Hey, what are you going to do if OTP follows Major League Baseball and goes to 3-batter minimum?
You know who's screwed with that? Brooklyn.
Oh, I think everybody that leverages their like bullpen special, it's going to hurt me. Like, it's not going to hurt me like it's going to hurt Steven, but I don't know. Like, all those Rugies, man, they are in trouble. I think you could still get something out of the lefties.
But... I had one special. I didn't have a Loogie last year. True story. I had a right hand. I had a Rugie, and that was it.
What do you guys think about?
But also, for me.
Sorry, go ahead.
For McHugh, I had my comment earlier about how nobody overpaid backup catchers. I forgot about Alan McHugh. This is an overpay for a backup catcher.
Well, except I think he may be the starter.
He is a 22-year-old. I assume he's going to start him.
I wouldn't start.
I mean, are you
like, Gabriel Flores?
Are you really going to bring in a 31-year-old to supplant your 22-year-old rookie? Who, if they're roughly the same ability, which they are, if I remember right, I'm going to start the 22-year-old.
Gabriel Flores is a catcher ability of 3. Like,
oh, I must have missed that.
His hands aren't like, he's not wearing like milk cartons on both hands back there trying to catch the ball, but like. It's close. I don't know.
Are we talking like Rube Baker in Major League 2 bad as catcher?
You know, no, not quite that bad. but I don't know. Steven, thoughts? Alan McHugh? Do you think this guy could actually start?
I mean, I think he can start. Whether he's going to, you know, is he going to hit like he hit in Long Beach last year, or is he going to hit like he hit in Vegas last year? And I don't. You know, I don't really like the player option at four million for 39, but it's, you know, it's not egregious.
Yeah, I agree. That was my note. Like, there's just a lot of player options in here that, like, I feel like you give player options when you're competing for players to like woo them to take your contract over someone else. I'm not sure that anybody was wooing Alan McHugh.
The only player using that logic, which I, again, similar to opt-outs, I don't offer player options. I just don't do it. But using that logic, which is fair, the only player who should have warranted a player option was Andre Georges, because I don't think you were going to get people fighting over Flores or McHugh or Victor Guerra.
Right. That was kind of my thought, too. Okay, but overall, I mean, they addressed their needs pretty well, right? Like, I thought they also might need a top two starter. You know, they needed a better defensive shortstop. They've got one that can hit. But, you know, they got a starter that was decent. They got a right field bat. They got bullpen help. I don't know what to expect out of Atlantic City next year. They weren't great last year. But they've got some parts. I just don't know that this gives them enough to really get over the hump. And especially not over Rockville.
I think they'll be better. If only because outside of the juggernaut that is Rockville, the Atlantic isn't great. I mean, Brooklyn blew up their team by design. And Charm City's not good. And who's the other team in there?
Montreal, who's kind of restructuring on the fly.
Montreal, especially with the Lafitte trade, they're clearly going into a rebuild. So I don't see any reason in... This could come back to be hilariously awful for me. I think Atlantic City could finish second place in that division and win over 81 games.
Well, if we have
now, I don't think by talent level they're that they're not going to contend for a wild card.
If we had an unbalanced schedule, they might, right? Like, that's the thing. That's one of the... If there is an unbalanced schedule, this is the year to try to steal a wild card in the JLA, right? Like, but
yeah, but also, I mean, even if you look at what's the division, the Ville division, I forget what it's called, the Sun Belt or the Southeast, it's the Ville
division.
I mean, but those guys, I mean, with the exception of Jacksonville and Huntsville, I mean, those are all 500 and under teams.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Southeast is good, but you know what I mean? There, it's not even with the balanced schedule. I put the Atlantic and the Southeast on roughly level footing.
So what you're saying is that the Frick League is a lot stronger than the Johnson right now. If some jerk hadn't blown it in the playoffs, we'd look a lot better. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Well, Rockville's the best team in baseball, as shown by the fact that they've beaten me 8-0 the last 2 years.
I think you just suck at representing the Frick. I think that's just, you need to let somebody else give it a shot.
Well, you know what, Ted? I'm going to say the same thing I said to Chris Wilson. Beat me and do something about it.
One time. I feel like going to 7 games over and over again is something useful. All right, Brooklyn, we're taking too long to go through teams. At this rate, we will never be finished. Brooklyn, who cares what their... My notes for Brooklyn, we'll do this really fast, are who cares what their needs are, because they're having an awesome fire sale. It's just Allen's, like, just amazingly entertaining insanity. They didn't sign anyone because they're still over budget.
You mean Wayne Huizenga?
It's not Wayne Huizenga. Wayne Huizenga was a jerk.
No, but I'm talking fire sale-wise. This is what this looks like.
Well, maybe, yeah. But this is more fun. That was sad and tragic.
I looked this up because I was doing through the, when I was doing this. They acquired 23 players, and not one of them was a free agent.
That's awesome. I like it.
That is incredible.
All right, so Charm City needed a lot of things because they are really not a competitive team at the moment. They're still rebuilding. And they got Carlos Garcia, second baseman / outfielder, back, and Jason Morris, reliever, and Luis Soto, starter. And then I don't know if we care about Chris Workman anymore. That makes me a little sad to say, but I don't know.
And I'm assuming you don't care about Ed Kenny?
I already skipped that. I already forgot that he existed.
All right, Steven, I'll let you go first because I have...
I think I would have liked to see him go a little younger with these signings and maybe a little more long term. For example, Carlos Garcia, I really like this this profile here is somebody that can play all over and hit a little bit. And now granted he's 31, but I maybe would have tried to get a couple more years. As it is with the player opt out, it's likely just a 1 year contract. And then you look at Soto, a fine pitcher, but 39 is not sure what the plan is.
Well, I think I might know what the plan is, and Ted, you and I have discussed this before, which is why I think you're probably thinking the same thing I am.
Trading these players.
Are these fan interest signings?
What?
Are these fan interest signings?
I think in some way they're fan interest. Like, it's not just like fan interest, you sign the guy and get a bump, but it's also like you keep from being just a little bit more terrible than you were going to be, so a few more fans don't leave and you don't have to earn those fans back later. But I just wonder if these are all tradable.
Yeah, I mean,
Jason Morris is a good relief arm. $8 million's not too tough.
Jason Morris, I had decent value, but I had questionable fit, but that was an overstatement because why is a bad team signing probably a top 10 closer?
Like, but you can trade him, and this is like $8 million. He can retain part of that deal. The guy might opt out. Same thing with Carlos Garcia. Like, that's extremely... If someone has an injury, that's not a bad player to pick up and plug in.
Carlos Garcia is the outfield version of Dong Soo Chong.
No, he's not. He's a much, much better hitter than Dong Soo Chong. Carlos Garcia, for his career, is almost a league average hitter. He is a league average hitter. 101 weighted runs created plus.
I thought he was worse than that.
Nope. He's just worse at not striking out than that. But he does... I think it's just the combination of wheels and just his extremely good eye, and he's got some gap power. So he's like a, you know, Dong Suchon plus. Like,
yeah. As for Soto and Workman, it's like meh and why. Like, why do you sign Chris Workman? Like, I agree with you.
Well, especially Workman, with Winston. Like, where is he going to play Workman? First? I mean, okay. That's not horrible. Maybe it is a fan interest signing. Maybe that's what it is.
That's the only thing that makes sense for me, is he wanted to sell. Which is, I mean, to be fair, we've beat people up for not doing this in the past, yeah. So we can't exactly flip it now. Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's perfectly fine if that's what he's doing. And he'll be a okay first base bat, probably. Okay. It's hard to give Charm City much of a grade because it doesn't really matter what they sign right now. Like, they're so not in a competitive part of their cycle that this is just biding time and finding things to do. And give the club some value.
I mean, to Brandon's credit, he knows where he's at, and he didn't sign guys the dumb contracts that would hinder the rebuild.
Yeah, and Steven, you mentioned that you thought he might go a little bit younger and longer to try to get some pieces in place. Do you think, who would your targets have been out of this group, I guess, then? Because I didn't really think about that at all. I tend to not.
We don't rebuild, so we don't think like that.
That's not where I was going with this. That might be part of my lack of experience thinking about it. But it's more, I don't like to sign young guys out of free agency. I think they're almost always overpaid.
Yeah, I mean, I would have been, well, obviously, like, what I did was Dong Suchon, Brett Compton, Chris Rios, these guys that are under 30 that you could sign for 4 or 5 years, and maybe they're not, you know, they're not superstars, but they kind of, you know, they're going to be good enough. And if you're, you know, how long is your rebuild really going to take? Is it going to take 2 to 3 years, or is it going to take 6 to 8 years? You know, I think that you sign these guys, you know, and you try to get them for a good number of years at a good value. And it, you know, in case you have some prospects come through a little quicker than you expect, and you're in contention, you know, year after next, then, you know, you're a little more prepared for that.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that. They, looking at their prospects, they look like they're probably 3 years away, but it's starting to look like they actually had prospects, where a couple of years back they had nothing. So, that, you know, there's progress being made. My fear is always that the guys won't be
Charm City was one of the ultimate cases of when the window shut. It didn't ease shut. It slammed with full force.
Somebody broke some fingers. My fear with those types of deals, Steven, is always that the guy won't be any good by the time my prospects get there. But I can see I still think you're making a strong argument. And at the prices that you got your young guys for, I think absolutely it'd be the right thing to do. Like, I'm always just fearful that, like, you have to overpay for those guys. And really nobody did this year, which is pretty amazing. And you're right. And those are the sorts of things that, like, adding those pieces in does keep you from being absolutely terrible. And I really wonder if being absolutely terrible from a financial standpoint and what it does to that is worth the high draft, like the one high draft pick that you get, you know, or the two. Like, it, I'm not sure it is. But that'd be an interesting thing to look at.
Well, it depends on what you do with that pick. Like, Nashville, when they went, or Nashville slash, they were really batting men at the end of the Halifax years, but they used one of those pretty high draft picks and turned it into Justin Jackson, who just won the Silk and is looking like a franchise cornerstone out there in left field.
But it is one player, right? And, like, and if, I mean, if you're bad for a few years, like really bad for, to get like multiple picks like that, you basically either have to have really loyal fans that just keep coming, which is doable, or you have to just accept the fact that your fan interest is going to get down around 40 and you're going to have problems making any money and you're going to have to rebuild your revenue structure entirely. And that is so brutal a process to get through sometimes that often you're looking where Nashville is now, where they've got young, cost-controlled Justin Jackson, and they can't... And I think this is the first year where they've been able to, like, have a reasonable payroll without having to, like, spend participation points and do other stuff. You know, they can't add to the parts that are coming out because they don't they're better now, but like a few years back, like they maybe could have competed with some young guys, but they weren't making any money, so they couldn't. You can't compete with a $60 million payroll. It doesn't matter if you've got three Justin Jacksons, and that's, you know. So I don't know.
Yeah,
Montreal.
Signed to nobody.
We just want to stop there. I don't know where Montreal's going. Kevin's kind of, at first I thought he was just more kind of retooling, but some of these more recent deals look more like rebuild, and I don't know that that's a bad idea. The team was already kind of expensive. Montreal was like, when Callahan left, it was set up to be one of those, I'm a master of my craft and I'm interchanging old parts for young parts as we're going and keeping this team competitive. And you have to have a huge familiarity with both the team and with what the previous guy's plan was when you step into that. And it's just kind of gone off the rails. And so some of those like younger parts have gotten more expensive and they haven't replaced the older parts. None of this is Kevin. This is the people that were in before him. And I'm not, I think tearing that team apart might actually be the best option, because I don't know how you're going to put in the pitching that team needs and fix kind of the log jams and offensive spots on the fly. It might be better to just not be horrible, but just, you know, just kind of somewhere in between total rebuild and retool for a little bit.
So I think especially with the Lafitte trade, that kind of signaled that, okay, maybe this is going to be a full-on rebuild. The issue I have with that is he has some older salaries, but I don't know how many of them he can move and get any sort of decent return. Like Lafitte was the big piece, and I think he got a decent return for him, especially because he's essentially a DH, and he's a very good DH, don't get me wrong. He's one of the best in the league, but it's tough to get a lot of return on that. And I thought he did. I mean, he didn't steal anything from Dixon, but I thought he got fair value.
Yeah.
Well,
and he added Hank Brewer, which goes the other direction for maybe not retooling. So I'm not sure where Kevin's going with this. He probably has a plan. I'm sure he does. And it'll be interesting to see that unfold, but I think maybe spending a lot of money in free agency here, and he couldn't have. I mean, he was at $99 million already, or he is at $99 million now. Like, it's not like the worst thing in the world that he didn't sign anybody.
No, if you're torn on what to do, sit out free agency. If any new people are listening to this podcast, if you don't know what your long term plan is, don't spend money in free agency.
Or even if you have a long term plan, don't. But you don't know what the price points are for players, also don't spend in free agency. You're much more likely to hurt yourself than help yourself. Rockville doesn't need to sign anybody. They're at $108.5 million. They didn't spend any money, and they didn't. That's fine. We're done. Done with the JLA. Okay.
So that ends the segment on the Johnson League Atlantic. Randy and Steven will be back with me to discuss the Johnson League Southeastern. I hope you've enjoyed what we've had so far, and thanks for listening.